Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're Baltimore Positive. We're positively at Pizza John's. I do have Raven scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. Also, our friends at GBMC putting us out on the road. For this, I will be undergoing the mini little nap that they're going to give me on Friday to make sure that I'm PSA clear and all of my men's procedures at GBMC. Big thanks to Dr. Hoskery. He's going to be coming on me on next week. His name is Hoskery, H-O-S-K-E-R-E, like Hosker, but it's Hoskery, and I'm not scared. So I'm going to let him know I ain't scared, but he's going to come on and talk me through one more time the special milkshake and all that stuff. So we'll be doing that 2 weeks from now. Get yourself checked out, guys out there especially, and our friends at GBMC keeping me safe so that I can continue to annoy my audience, my guests, my wife, and my dearest friends, including Mike Versigliano, sports cartoonist extraordinaire, formerly of the Baltimore Sun, Crack Magazine, and most importantly of Beverly Hills, or is it Mayfield? What is it?
It's Eastwood Drive. Mayfield's the, you know, Oppo, the park there.
Well, I mean, people were asking over at Coco's the other day.
Laurelville,
you know,
Arcadia.
You and Versig at odds over this Bills-Ravens thing or like whatever. And I'm like, nah, man, Versig had grand twins in Brooklyn, and there was an election. I don't know if you knew, or the right guy won. Good job, guys. Way to go, New York.
Pretty amazing.
So you were up in New York, so you missed Coco. So
I did, yeah.
I said, come over to Pizza John's. Now, have you ever been to Pizza John's?
I have been here. Yes, I've been to Pizza John's, but never for your show, of course.
And you have done radio one time with Luke, maybe, in all the years?
Yes, at least once.
At least Coco's.
I know at Coco's. Maybe one other time at some point.
Yeah, right. But it's sure. Rare that I bring together such an all-star ensemble. I mean, Bill Cole and Todd Schuller. How long have you guys been friends? What years you guys meet?
Mid-90s.
So 30 years, and it's the first time they've been on a show together.
They're awesome.
They're together, right? Don't tell them that, please.
I'm just saying. I enjoyed it.
But you know, this is Luke's stomp. People don't know Luke's Essex background, so people see that Pizza John's hat that you're not wearing right
I'm
now.
I'm not, yeah.
You're wearing something else. But
I figured if I, it's kind of like when you go to a concert, you can't wear the band's T-shirt to the actual concert, right? I mean, that's kind of considered.
I've seen it,
a little,
but it's flame.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Resig knows what I'm talking about here.
Sure.
Well, but I do know that you love Pizza John's.
I do. I mean, my grandparents lived right across the street. I mean, they're no longer with us, but my dad grew up here. My dad went to Kenwood. You know, he was born in 1951, so I guess that made him class of 69, right around there.
Your dad went to high school with my mother. If I get my mother's high school, you have your dad's high school yearbooks. I have my mother's high school yearbook.
I think my mom has it. I'm not sure.
I have a yearbook.
Okay.
I bet your dad is in my mother's high school yearbook.
Probably.
I'm seriously.
Yeah, I went to Kenwood.
How did I not know that?
I don't know.
I didn't know that.
I feel like I've mentioned. Oh, I mean, you knew that my dad and my grandparents lived here. I mean, literally right across the street.
I've never heard Kenwood with you, Bluebirds.
Yeah.
Now, we got to say something.
I mean, I don't know a whole lot. I mean, obviously, that was a long time ago. My dad's been gone for 21 years now, but yeah.
I wanted to do something to honor Heist today, because Heist is an Essex guy, even though he was more of a Costas guy. But I know he had a lot of Pizza John's. I mean, he swallowed a lot of aggression, a lot of Pizza John's.
Oh, yeah.
But they're going to put him in the Kenwood Hall of Fame. And I sort of worked something out on that, and I was going to do a little something today. But the Kenwood Hall of Fame guys, we're going to do that next year. So let's get his family. Let's get Ginsburg out. Get some of his buddies out. And
that'll be nice.
Yeah. Did you know Craig?
I don't know him personally,
know
but I know him online, of course.
Sure.
His presence. And he's even contributed to some of my goofy trivia
He knew
stuff,
of so you.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Of course he knew of you. So, well, it's good to have you guys together. We're not going to do football in this segment. We're going to do pizza. We're going to do crinkle cut french fries and gravy and delicious cheesesteaks, double provolone and all that here in Essex. But I want to do some baseball. And, Rasig, I skipped out on you Tuesday because of the election and all that. I missed you. We could have talked some football early in the week and congratulated you on some Bills.
Big win for Buffalo.
It was a great win for Buffalo. Like we just said, can they do it in the postseason? 0-3 so far against that team. So I'll give you my baseball continuation of that. I'm a Bills fan. I lived in Buffalo, as some of you know, and it's always been frustrating. The Blue Jays continued that for me because the Blue Jays played in Buffalo for a year.
Well, they're Buffalo's team, for better or worse.
I mean, there's a lot of Buffalo fans that are Yankee fans, really, but. It, for 1 year during the COVID year, they were the Buffalo Jays. They were the Blue Jays. But they were. But I even have a Buffalo Jays shirt that Bellani sent me. So we were rooting for the Blue Jays in that series, and it was the same kind of frustrating Bills loss or Sabres loss.
It was only Game 7, you know.
It was
only had a lead in the ninth inning of Game 7 with one out.
Oh, my God. You know, what an amazing
great series.
And what a frustrating game from anybody.
Double down the line, they win the World Series, period, right? Like, literally.
If the catcher doesn't get his cleat back on home plate, they win the World Series.
That's right. True,
I mean,
too.
Think about it. That's how close it was.
They were
it's
like
a fantastic series. We talked about it, but
yeah,
phenomenal.
It was like five or six times during that game that I thought the Blue Jays had it, you know, and each time it got snatched away from them from either a great Dodgers play or something karma that went wrong for the Blue Jays on that one. It was tough.
In contrast, I was watching that Game 7, and I texted my best buddy and said, if the Orioles were playing in this, they would have lost the World Series four times already with their defense.
That's true.
Like, honestly, and we've had drama like that with the Ravens. I mean, you and I, even back in 2012-13 with Billy Cundiff and even four plays at the goal line with the Ravens in the Super Bowl, right? Like, we've had the chew-your-fingernails moments as fans here. Been a long time, but can you imagine the Orioles in that circumstance in a Game 7 at Camden Yards. I mean, it that doesn't even seem that's very surreal to think that there would be a Game 7 of the World Series at Camden Yards, that the Orioles could be in that kind of position. But that's what we're going to talk about right now, because that was surreal for you and I on opening day when you and I fist bumped and you went in the press entrance and I bought a $12 ticket at Skydome and went in. That were like the beginning of the season. The notion that place was going to be the scene and the site of Game 7 of the World Series, I don't know what the odds would have been had we would have gone on the ESPN bet and bet on that.
The now-defunct ESPN
bet. Exactly,
back.
Yeah, exactly. God bless you, Hollywood Casino. But that notion that you could be that close and that far away and think like we were last-place team last year, so that is, I don't want to sell Katie too many tickets, but I want to do a little sunshine for you, Luke, because you're Mr. Sunshine with baseball. That is the hope that springs eternal. And in many, many years with Angelos, it wasn't even possible. We knew on November 5th that next year was impossible. It doesn't feel that way with this version of the Orioles right now. It does feel like they could make real moves and that they have four or five position players and at least two pitchers that next year could ascend. And they could be the team with three MVP candidates, two Cy Young candidates. You know, like, they could be that next year. Now let's talk about how they can get there, because that's a pretty optimistic thought for a last-place team for me.
It's always easy when you have an example of a last-to-first situation like Toronto. I mean, let's face it. A year ago at this time, are the Orioles perceived any worse than Toronto was at that point? Or are they perceived better because
they won 101 games 2 years ago.
Sure. Yeah. But it's fun, and it's funny. I mean, I can go back to conversations you and I had 6 months ago, a year ago, 18 months ago, and there were definitely times where we drew comparisons as far as Toronto was kind of a year or two ahead of where the Orioles were with their young core and with making the playoffs and not winning playoff games. And then they had this backslide in 2024 where, you can sell it, but doesn't mean there isn't a heck of a lot of work that needs to be done this offseason. I mean, money to be spent, more importantly, wisely, to not be afraid to make some bold moves, whether you're talking about a signing, whether you're talking about a trade. I mean, obviously, they've gotten some pretty good early reviews as far as their managerial hire in Craig Albernaz for a new guy. Doesn't mean he's going to be able to do the job. And, you know, I think this is where you say, okay, they've sold me on him enough. Of the three individuals that were there for the press conference on Monday, this past Monday when this past Tuesday when they're introducing the manager, I was far more impressed with what Albernaz had to say than, you know, we've heard Mike Elias not be the most dynamic speaker as far as someone that's going to really pump you up. David Rubenstein, honestly, at some points, almost coming across as lecturing or just not really having a great feel for what he's talking about.
Right.
So I don't know if all in's the right term, because I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I was intimately familiar with Craig Albernaz's career, but I like the boxes that it checks. But now it's, okay, ownership in front office.
Well, Craig,
what are you
going to
do with this baseball team?
Other than drinking and driving, there's nothing he could do wrong between now and March 25th, right? Like, he's not going to make any decisions, off the field.
I mean, nothing front-facing, right? I mean, he has a lot of work to do in terms of building rapport with his players and evaluating, laying his eyes and his ears on what's been going on and then hopefully having some fresh ideas. I mean, Rasig, I mean, this is one of the things I liked about him, that he cut his teeth coaching in Tampa Bay system, which the Rays have done as much with as little as anybody in baseball over the last 20 years. I like Cleveland and their profile, not so much in the terms of the money they spend, but what they've gotten out of their resources. So he was in San Francisco and, maybe not in their peak of 10 or 15 years ago, but highly regarded nonetheless. So I like a lot of that, but what's
still the
next?
Still the same GM or person making the moves, and that's
philosophically
70%.
Sure.
Yes. How does the philosophy this offseason rear itself in some way that feels different than Angelo's, feels competent, feels structured, feels conveyed to the fans to say, this is different? It didn't feel different to me. They had a press conference this week I was locked out of. I sit and I watch it, and I'm like, owner looks like he doesn't know what he's talking about. General manager is what he is. Still seems like the guy that would fire the guy next to him and then hide for 4 days. Therefore, I wouldn't have Elias around. But that being said, Albernaz, top of class. I'm bought in. To your point,
same.
Done enough for me to check enough boxes that, all right.
I have an open mind about it.
We have a manager. Now, let's get some pitching. Now, let's get some. Sure. What's the next thing we're going to do?
So, Luke, I wanted to ask you, compare it, because you guys referred to the Toronto last the first thing. Do the Orioles have more young talent than Toronto had last year coming in, or similar amount?
I mean, obviously, it's easy to look at Vlad Guerrero. It's easy to look at Bo Bichette.
But then you look at Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and Jackson Holliday. They're supposed to be that.
Sure.
And they really are. And if they're not, if they don't turn into that, we ain't playing World Series games here.
Yeah.
Literally.
No question. I mean, obviously, some combination of those guys has to pop. And it can't just be two guys. It needs to be at least a few others, right?
Westberg.
At the end of a year and a half ago, Jordan Westberg was the talk of the town. I mean, he was an all-star last year. He's been hurt largely since then. I don't think any less of him as a player, but I think less of his availability and his ability to reach a ceiling
Adley
as a
Rutschman
result.
Adley Rutschman was their best player 24 months ago, and he is now a question mark as to whether he's a major league catcher at this point, literally.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
that's incredible.
Right, and when we use the Toronto comparison, it's not to say that it's a perfect comparison. I mean, we've talked about the potential for growth when you're talking about being the only Major League Baseball team in Canada. We've seen what those World Series ratings and the eyeballs that were on that series. Obviously, L.A. being a huge market had a big part to do with that, but Toronto as well.
Whoever
right?
the Orioles want to sign this offseason, name pitcher X or outfielder Y or whoever you think that they should sign, reliever, the Blue Jays are going to have more money to spend on it, period. And that's a factor of the industry and the game. But we always said, oh, how are we going to win with the Yankees and the Red Sox? Blue Jays have more money than either one of them if they try. And that's saying something about the Yankees, because the Blue Jays have a country. It's a different gig.
But the Blue Jays did try to get some big-name free agents last year.
And tried to get Ohtani.
Didn't, right? I mean, and they just kept trying, I guess, and until they got at least a few guys that signed on. So I don't know if it's because they didn't want to play in Toronto or whatever, but guys like Soto and some of those other guys that were available just didn't go to Toronto, you know? So I don't know if they would come to Baltimore over Toronto, but
I don't know if we would have the money to outbid or whether they'd have the gumption to outbid. Because when I say Ohtani to him, he just shrugs his shoulders, and people are like, well, we can't have him. We can't have the really good things because it's expensive and it'll cost too much. I don't care what it costs. Hey, my money. You know what I mean? Like, literally, win. You got to win.
Sure.
Whatever cost you have to win, you're going to be more pragmatic about, we can't shop top shelf, and we really don't want to, because you always sort of make that case that we don't have to spend that money. But once you say that, then you have to be that much more deft, that much more lucky to not have guys' arms fall off, because they could have given $250 million to Corbin Burns.
I was just going
to
say. I mean, Corbin Burns, they lost.
I would have applauded, too.
And that's, for me, is much more the argument as far as not doing that specifically for pitchers and why you need to load up on pitching and why they're...
And that is philosophical for you and probably shared by Mike Elias. Probably, right?
Probably, although my pushback on that would be then why so little interest in drafting pitchers, especially if you – 2023 is, and I've showed, remember, I had the list, I held it up on the video and everything.
Handwritten by
That's
Lucho,
when they started teacher. To put a little more into drafting pitching. Now, we're still not talking first round, second round, per se, but those first few drafts, you kind of look and save for like a couple guys, like you could count on one hand and have a finger or two left over. They were waiting until like the 8th, the 9th, the 10th round, the 12th round, right?
Right.
So they've at least started to do more of that. And if you look at their system now, I'm not saying it's top of class in this way, but you are finding more and more, you know, the Jim Callises, the Baseball Americas, Keith Laws, those types who are really paying attention to farm systems, their pitching is starting to look better. Is it where it needs to be? Of course not.
But Elias, if he were here, in his defense, he would say, Luke, I traded Ortiz to get to get Corbin Burns. I traded a second baseman and an outfielder, albeit an all-star outfielder, that we had no use for here, or we believed he was below Mayo and Kowser and a bunch of these other guys on our depth chart. And we got a pitcher that's going to be our opening day pitcher next year who pitched to a sub-2 ERA who we've resurrected because we're smart around here, even though we fired all our pitching coaches. But Elias would make the case that I turned a second base, shortstop, and outfield, B prospects, all of them B prospects, into a Cy Young candidate that we couldn't keep,
right.
but I did turn it into pitching. So he would make that case. And I'd have to say, you're right.
And honestly, that's what's been my position in terms of not viewing this as a black or white, open and shut kind of deal of Mike Elias has done a lot of good things. Now, I felt much better about where he was from November of 2018 to, say, the trade deadline of 23 as far as what he had done to get them to that point. The body of work now for two and a half years since then is where I'm underwhelmed as far as he did all this work to build this thing to a point where it felt like it was very much ready to take off. And then, you know, where are the big moves to get you over the hump? Burns was a great move. Even with him having walked after a year. I mean, look at that. Joey Ortiz profiles more and more like a utility infielder.
Joey Ortiz profiles the guy who wouldn't have gotten a bat here the last 2 years.
Sure, no question.
He's not that bad. He's getting better.
But these are still assets that you're managing, right? This is still value. Whether you're going to be able to maximize that value on your club or not, these are still assets that you want to manage, right? I mean, whether they're going to be on your team or not. So in the case of they traded Ortiz and DL Hall, who I loved for a long time, but it got to a point where the injuries and the stunning of his development, he's a reliever, right? And even hasn't really made that big of an impact even in that way. So regardless of Burns being here 1 year and then being gone, I'll sign off on that trade to this day. Problem is, again, if it was a one-year thing and you understood your chances probably weren't great of keeping him, that was a time to push your chips in a little more aggressively at that point. Not to trade your entire farm system, but, hey, you and I have talked about it a lot. Tarek Skubal, 2 trade deadlines ago. Was it possible? Maybe, maybe not.
Crochet.
Garrett Crochet moved. I mean, the Red Sox did it. The Orioles could have absolutely.
They had the ammunition
absolutely
to do it.
Could have made a move like that.
Could have traded Colton Cowser or something like that.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Which would have been outrageous back then.
Which would look
would
much
look
better
really
now.
Good right now.
So and look, to rehash all this isn't to say that all is lost, but they've got a lot of heavy lifting to do. And I'll go back to a point that you just made because I was thinking about this a lot. Does it look different? And there were elements, again, going back to Elias, the first 4 or 5 years that he was in charge did look different in terms of valuing the farm system, building an academy in the Dominican Republic, becoming a player at all when it comes to international talent, which the Angelos era, they completely sat that out.
Right.
For all intents and purposes. So
the way Shuler's sitting at AI.
So there, right. So there were changes that were implemented that did look different, but as we've now gotten to this point, and obviously there having been a transition from John Angelos being the control person to David Rubenstein being the control person, and seeing how many Angelos lieutenants, for lack of a better description, have remained in place, that's where you haven't necessarily seen change that you would like to see. And
attendance is down 500,000. And
since you brought this up, and this will be a little more in your wheelhouse, and you know, Rasig, you can chime in as well. I found it illuminating that the Orioles on November 6th announced their promotional schedule for 2026. I went back and looked over the last 10 years, the earliest they had ever announced that, typically that was a January or February thing, earliest they had announced that, December 14th.
I was wondering what you were writing down there.
Well, and they're trying to do it to stoke tickets for holiday sales, right?
Well, and how much of it is a response to what are Birdland membership sales looking like on the heels of all the changes made at the end of...
Oh, you think it's
I'm wondering if
play.
There is some desperation there where they say, oh my gosh, we... Because they... Typically, this is done in concert with individual tickets going on sale. When they sent out their press release a couple days ago, they just said that will be announced sometime soon.
Oh, so, I saw it. It was curious to me.
To be clear, I'm not even saying it's a bad thing to announce that in November. That's something they should have been doing 10 or 15 years ago. However, I do wonder how much of that is a reflection of, oh my gosh, we need to start moving Birdland membership sales. And with... The tickets cost rising, and there's no more 13 and 29 game plan. They're pushing people to 20 and 40 game plans.
Revenue.
I just wonder how much of that was a response to, ooh, this is not going well. We need to get going. But I will also say, I'm not saying that's a bad thing per se to announce your promotionals in November compared to waiting until pitchers and catchers have reported and people are waiting to potentially buy tickets if they're excited and you're not giving them that opportunity.
I saw that big Kyle Bradish giveaway. You know, I saw
that. Yeah. Well, they didn't even have pictures. They didn't even have photos. Typically, when they put it out, they had the photos, like the prototype of each giveaway. They didn't even have that. So, I don't know. That was my takeaway from that's telling me that Birdland membership's not going as nearly as well.
And
it's not a shock, based on what we.
It's also not a shock to Katie Griggs that we give things away, have people come. Like, that is their model at this point. That their model to getting asses in the seats isn't winning games. It isn't their players. It's Star Wars night. It's get a bobblehead. It's we're going to give you something. And they're not giving it at all. They upcharge. They charge you $5 more for the night the bobblehead's there to pay for it.
But it would be a different model if they won more. You know, if they got out of the gate really well and started winning games, it would be a
thing. Well, their only hope to sell tickets at this point is that. That's all they have. Other than the Cardinals are coming to town, or the Dodgers, or it's fireworks night. I mean, that there has to be something that feels like an incentive into it at this point for me to get my wallet and give them money right now. Because you know what? They're not top of mind right now. They're not at all. And the Ravens are going to play this week and next week and the week after that, and they're not playing for five more months. And to your point, you don't think business picks up until they start winning. They can't start winning until June.
Well, I mean,
like literally,
that's still going to be the major driving force. And as I've said to you, not just winning for a year or two, they need to do it and sustain that, right? I mean, we've talked, I remember famously talking to you about the Royals having won the World Series, and you had so many friends in KC wondering what that was going to do. You know, they had a nice bump for 3 years maybe, and then it kind of settled back in.
Yeah, so everybody in the stadium at game four of the ALCS, everybody was going to have season tickets for life.
Oh
my God, I'm on the 13 game
And it was
plan.
An extraordinary
and
atmosphere.
And 3 years
was,
later, they're in last place, and there's 4,000 people there again.
And, sure. And that very much is, that's very much the
all
push.
The more reason to really, really love your real fans, Katie, the people who were there all the time, no matter what. You have to love them.
Well,
because you're
going to
lose.
And
you are.
And there's also, you have to cast as wide a net as possible, right? I mean, it's not, if we win, we don't need to give anything away. I mean, I've said this to you. I mean, go look at the Houston Astros, who have won as much as anyone over the last decade. Go look at their promotional schedule last year. They had plenty of giveaways, a lot.
They have sponsors
during the week
to pay for it.
Of course.
Period.
Of course, but that is still part of the model for attracting people to come to games, even if it's more people during the week, right? I mean, if you're a healthy franchise that's winning, at the very least, you should be cleaning up on the weekends, right? I mean, I think we would all be in agreement on that. But
or Adam Jones bobblehead night.
Well, but that usually is done on a Saturday, though,
right?
It's very rare when you give that away on a Tuesday, but point is, it's all these things, right? And look, I've made the comment about they need to winning is what's going to drive it first and foremost. Yes, but that doesn't mean you don't treat people well in the process of doing that. I mean, you have to do all of that, and you know, what are they going to do? I mean,
what's your cartoon on this, Rasig? If you're cartooning this right now, what's your What do you think of the Orioles right now? What comes top of mind on the back end of this press conference that if you had to be the snarky jerk that you can be or the no. loving hometown fawning hero guy, where are you on the Oriole competitive? Because you wore an Oriole hat today without even realizing we were going to talk Orioles.
I mean, it's the type of thing where if I was a cartoonist, I'm a retired cartoonist basically.
No.
Well, I mean.
He told me last week.
Once a cartoonist, always a cartoonist.
I said to him, I drove him home. We went drinking together. We went day drinking, over Sig and I together.
Wow.
At Coco's. And he lives 6 blocks away, but he's getting older, and he felt like he needed a ride. So I gave him a ride home. And he said, I said, Sig, I need a favor. And he looks at me like sad eyes. He's like, don't make me draw anything for you. You did do that.
I did.
I'll do anything for you but a cartoon.
I've done so many drawings for you and of you that.
Don't make me draw you again. I'm like, I don't need a cartoon, Rasig. I don't need that.
I don't know what the cartoon would be. I know that last year I would have had a bit of a field day kind of doing cartoons about the pratfalls of this team all season long. I think it would be from an upbeat, more.
What is the hope? As you
yeah, say. Exactly. Standpoint going into the season, and I think part of that is the Toronto thing for me, just to kind of see a franchise go from last to first, with a lot of talent. This is a team that has a lot of talent too. I would build a cartoon that way, I think.
I've been talking about the Ravens' talent the last 8 weeks too. You hope that catches up in their record though at some point. And with the Orioles, all of us are of the mindset that they need to move some tectonic plates here in the offseason, right? I mean, not just, well, we're going to come back with Gunner and Adley, and
yeah.
we're going to just bring all the young guys back, and we're just going to give them some more water and, you know, hope for some more sunlight and hope that all of the flowers in the garden bloom, that Mayo's going to be a 30 home run guy, and Gunner's going to hit 30 and knock in 120, and Rutschman's going to come back to life and be a 274 hitter with 18 bombs and 90 RBI. Westberg's going to be healthy for 145 games next year, and he's going to fulfill that promise of hitting 28 home runs and driving in 94 runs. Like, that is, I can buy into all
and
of that.
And look.
I can buy into, because that's not buying into Brady Anderson being a 185 hitter at Rochester and then hitting a 50 home run.
Right.
That's not pie in the sky for any of these prospects. It's also not crazy for me to think that Bradish and Rogers are going to be top of line pitchers, that they're going to be front end of the rotation, game 1, 2, 3 starters in a playoff scenario next October. I'll buy all that. Now, what else has to happen between now and February 15th.
Isn't that the thinking that went into it last season, basically? You went in with that kind of mentality. Like, these things are going to happen with all these guys.
Well, we lost Sondheim there. We're going to add muscles.
Right. So they add muscles.
And we lost Burns, and we're going to add 3 41-year-old wash-ups.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's
so
what it was.
You can't go into a season that way, you know? The Dodgers didn't go into this.
Well,
I mean, the Dodgers had a lot of money. But the Dodgers had, like, 8 starting pitchers on that team that were great starting pitchers.
And Ohtani.
And Ohtani, you know, so like, I don't know, to me, if you have the wherewithal to do it, find depth, you know.
What makes you believe? What are the 3 to 5 things? Kittredge, I mean.
Oh, I mean, that's not one of my 3 to 5 things. I mean, God bless that they brought him back.
At least they have him.
That's 60 innings of relief help.
You hope.
Sure.
That you see, right?
Look.
I mean, a professional help, not we're going to cross our fingers for some guy at Norfolk or some left-hander who pitched for the Pirates 2 years ago.
I mean, look, you just laid out the scenario of everything going right with these young guys. And look, it's not all going to go that way. But they need a lot of that to go that way. You're not going to turn over your entire roster. When I've suggested the idea of perhaps trading one of those guys, you know, in a way that can help you get a veteran asset, a starting pitcher, whatever it might be, but also the idea of maybe shaking that group up a little bit. You know, maybe there's, and I don't say this to try to be too critical of the young guys, but, you know, they came here as rock stars, right? I mean, Adley Rutschman was the face of the Orioles from the moment he was drafted in June of 2019. What has he really done to truly warrant that other than the 2 years that he played well? And it's been a mess for the last year.
Well, this is the
half way
we sit here and talk about it. And catcher, set. We know who our catchers are. We know who our first baseman. We know who our second baseman.
I don't know who the first baseman is yet. I'm not ready to sign off on Coby Mayo. I mean that's the thinking that got them into trouble last year.
Fair enough.
That's where look, Gunnar Henderson's going to be the shortstop, right? You have Jordan Westberg and Jackson Holliday in the infield. Barring moving one of those guys, right. In a more blockbuster, not blockbuster trade, but a high-profile trade, you would expect them because they've at least established themselves
and
as major
leaders.
By the way,
Henderson, I just want to say this out loud because I've never said this, and I have. Todd's going to throw pizza at me. If there's a point where you know you can't sign him, you better be thinking about, like, you know, I don't know what the deal
would
be. Why
2026 is pretty big,
this is
right?
Where you get the Garrett Crochets and you make those really tough calls to say he's not going to sign here for $400 million and we're not, and that's that.
Sure.
And so where is the current value
you're
of
starting
him to
see
get
this,
three other players?
You're starting to
you
see
know?
This being talked about in Detroit, about Tarik Skubal. Are they going to? I mean, he's entering the final year of club control. Are they going to sign him?
Once you have a superstar, there's milking it, and then there's what they did with Machado, which is getting a bag of beans for him in the
end. Well, but then there's also, like, in Detroit's case, okay, they could sell him. They're not – for 1 year of Tarik Skubal, they'll do well, but it's not as though Milwaukee cleaned up for Corbin Burns. And I'll even hear Tarik Skubal's better right now than Corbin Burns was at that point in time, but – when you're in a position like they're in the AL Central, and when you look at the landscape of the American League, I mean, to the point that we were talking about a few minutes ago, it's not as though Toronto, even as they were the best team in the league for much of the season, it's not as though they were viewed as this unbeatable juggernaut, maybe in the way that we view the Dodgers. So if you're Detroit, yeah, you're thinking in terms of we have this asset that's going to potentially be gone a year from now, but you still have the 2026 season that you don't want to just punt on. So, yeah, it does get tough. And that's why I said with the Orioles with Gunnar, even though, you know, he's not in a contract year, but if you have another season that looks largely like this past one or it's only marginally better, then, yeah, a year from now I'll be saying you probably need to trade Gunnar Henderson. And that's not something Orioles fans want to hear. But
no.
Orioles fans aren't going to want to hear Kowser, Westberg, Rutschman, they'll all hear at this point, but value's down on that.
I don't know as much about Colton Kowser. I know that they, you know, obviously with the whole Moo thing. And,
right. I mean,
you know, they had the section of tickets, the section of seats with the ticket sale and everything, but
I think Orioles fans would be happy to upgrade
his numbers
most of those outfield positions on this team
right,
if they could.
Right. So, you know,
so you're expecting outfielders and pitching.
Oh, they need to
have to find a big outfielder on this team.
They have to add
one
relatively high impact outfielder.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree.
As I've said to you, you know, I don't necessarily view this through the lens that you're going to have three outfielders that you view as playing 155 games each. Part of that solution might be Colton Kowser becomes a platoon player. I like Dylan Beavers a lot, but I'm not just automatically assuming he's going to play 160 games. Now, he might be that kind of player. I really like what I saw from him, especially that he draws walks on like about two-thirds of this roster, albeit in a limited sample in 6 weeks. But, you know, those two, Tyler O'Neill's going to be on the roster, right? If he's healthy, he's either going to be on the IL or he's going to be on the roster. but clearly you're not doing any meaningful planning on him being any more than
they give him the press pass. No, I'm just saying you're being tough.
Oh well,
Tyler O'Neill.
But he's going to be on the. I kind of view him like Grayson Rodriguez right now. Grayson Rodriguez is healthy. He's going to be on the pitching staff. I mean, he's too talented not to be. But is he a plan A guy for you? Of course not right now.
Closer.
So, closing? Maybe he winds up in the bullpen. I mean, they're going to have to.
The O'Neill thing, as much as I'm being mean and you're being snarky and we're being all that, he might be a guy that hits 28 home runs next year, right?
If he's healthy, I'm guessing you see him play as
if
a DH.
If he's healthy, they're going to give him the at-bats.
He might only play
some money.
You know, maybe the. If I'm trying to draw this up as I always try to say best case scenario, but I'm not in la la land, right? Your most reasonable best case scenario for him might be that he DHs 70 games and maybe plays
40,
50 in the outfield.
Right.
And then whatever you get beyond that, you know, 120 games is still on the higher end of his career as far as games that he's played in a season. If you can get that from him, I mean, that might be 27 home runs right there.
Sure.
I mean, he has power. He is not lacking ability. His problem is availability. And obviously that's a huge thing. And that's why I certainly wasn't over the moon about a 3-year contract.
Well, it'd be a Mike Elias about him at this point, right? I mean, if you were allowed to ask questions that pissed them off, you'd say, what did you see in him then and where are you now? And
no, it's what I just told you. I mean, look at the power potential. I mean, that's...
But the risk-reward on that, everybody in the end, there was a reason he was available.
Sure.
Right, literally.
Sure, sure. And look, I mean, at the same time, it didn't mean that...
It was a risky bet, is all I'm saying.
It was.
For the amount of money involved.
It was. At the same time, we also need to look from 30,000 feet, 3 years, $49 million. Relative to many contracts around baseball, it was risky for what this organization has been in recent years, for sure, but it's not something that should cripple your franchise either. Let's at least acknowledge that much, right? It's not something that they should be thinking is prohibitive for them to go out and spend money this offseason. When you look at their projected payroll right now, it's roughly half of what it was last year because of all the expiring one-year deals that they gave out last year. As I said to you, now, they didn't sink a lot of long-term money into that roster last year, but they spent money. The big question was, did they spend it very wisely? And I think that was a pretty emphatic no, save for Ramon Laureano and a couple other guys.
Goes back to Craig Kimbrell, right? Like back to the last 2 years, the signings haven't been good and the money hasn't been great, but there's been more money because Moneybags at least appears on the outside in these press conferences to be a guy who's going to go in over his skis. And I would say this, for the $20 million that they urinated away on the outfielder last year, half a million tickets, whatever that represents from a loss standpoint, is far greater than $20 million for them. And I keep thinking about Katie Griggs' job, which is getting bobbleheads on sale on, you know, before the pumpkin spice goes away, right? Yeah. Literally. And where their revenue stream is, where their cable television is, where their renewals are, where they're, you know, they're selling Blondell Miller a package over here, trying to get $1 million a year for Todd and Mark to go have a skybox or whatever. However that sales part goes in the off season, it's not like a normal business.
No.
Normal business is, we sell so many pizzas here, we order this much sauce, we order this much dough. That's how we run the business. Rubenstein's going into this thing incredibly leveraged at $1.8 billion. No matter how much money you think he has or how wealthy he is, he's begging too many people for too much money for me to just think this is like cab fare at $1.8 billion. Yeah. He'd like to lead you to believe that. I have really rich people that would tell you nobody's liquid to $1.8 billion to be thrown around for a baseball team. So they're in over their skis while John Angelos is down in Nashville running around with the money.
Sure.
Literally. John Angelos is running around with that money, and they're trying to figure out how to recoup it, how to get money out of the marketplace, how to find lawyers bigger than Blondell Miller Schuler that may give them $5 million a year for their skybox and their name on the scoreboard and their name on the jersey. And like, they're trying to sell all of this stuff, and they get an empty stadium, an empty soul, a last place thing, a new manager, and we all want them to spend money that they don't have, and there's no vision of where that money's coming from Katie Griggs' vision of saying, what's my certainty even with cable television? We don't even know what channel they're going to be on next year or the year after that, and we're still paying Tyler O'Neill $20 million a year. So I think industry-wise,
And you haven't even mentioned
the strike,
the near certainty of a lockout, lockout in 2027.
The fact that
feels
the business
like
is
very dangerous for missing games.
This time next year, we're going to have a very different conversation as to whether it's Tarek Skubal or what pitcher we're signing, right? Because they have an industry. We talked about AI being disruptive.
Right.
They have an industry in major disruption from a media standpoint, an age, gender, National Hispanic Night, Katie, here I am, like trying to get affinity groups together and get people to games, yet the agents want $50 million for my baseball player this offseason. And if you want Tyler O'Neill, it costs you $70 million to shop. $70 million for one player would be what Katie Griggs would look up and say, I'm hoping that we can increase our revenue by $70 million next year. Do you know what that's going to take? To increase our revenue by $70 million next year? You mean cable television? You know how many crab hot dog things Stan Jablonski's going to have to bring his daughter into Baltimore?
Going to have to create a lot of interest, which is done by having a good offseason and winning.
Signing exciting players, you know?
Yeah, I mean, signing expensive, exciting players, because we're into the expensive season now. We really are.
I also, you're not giving Oriole fans, or we're not giving Oriole fans enough credit. I mean, none of us were excited when they signed Tyler O'Neill or Charlie Morton last year. We know those. We know a guy that's 42 or whatever isn't going to be
Corbin Burns.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's the one player that we were excited about was Corbin Burns here in recent memory from a signing standpoint. So they have to find someone like that again, I think. And it might be the outfielder. It might be, you know, Someone like that that's going to get fans juiced up for and our expectations up for next year.
And this is where I always struggle because I'm going to be the level-headed, nerdy baseball guy that will continue to say, yes, spending money, but needs to be spending money wisely, right? They spent a lot of money at various times during the Peter Angelos era, and they didn't spend it very well. One of the highest profile off seasons I can remember was when they signed, what, Rafael Palmeiro the second time around, Sammy Sosa, and Javi Lopez. How did that work out?
I forgot Vladimir Guerrero even played here
until
I saw a picture of it last
year. Yeah, I mean, it was great.
I literally forgot he played
here. That was fantastic.
Jim Tomey played here, for crying out loud.
Also fantastic that he played here, too.
So there's always
I love that.
But
Sid needs an old-timer.
Me saying that, I also fully acknowledge, you know, going back to your point, you want this to feel different. And this, it's funny. I've been thinking about this a lot. And, you know, I'll often cite that, you know, I was 2 weeks old the last time the Orioles won the World Series. And I have gray hair now, thinning hair, all that. I'm old. 42 now. I should have said relatively speaking.
I'm the ancient mariner here, man.
I think back to when I was 10 years old, and it's funny because we were talking about the Blue Jays being in the World Series, and I was 10 when the Blue Jays won in 93, and the Blue Jays were the Yankees to my age as far as baseball fans, you know, as growing up
as a kid. Hated Paul Molitor. He didn't know good.
But I think about it in those terms. I think of growing up as an Oriole fan in the late 80s and early 90s. You know, 1983 was still fresh in many people's minds. But to a 10-year-old, that might as well feel like it was a century ago, right? How you feel about time is so relative, you know, depending on your age, right? Now you think about when you're 40 or you're 50 or you're 60. I mean, 10 years ago feels like 10 minutes ago,
right?
But it's funny. I you know, right around that same time in that era, Cleveland made it to the World Series in 1995, right? And that had been, 41 years since they had last won the pennant? 54 was the last time they'd been to the World Series. 48 was the last time they had won it. And I can remember trying to contextualize that as a kid, and that felt like, oh, my gosh, the Indians have been so bad for so long. It's now been, we're going on 42 years since the Orioles last won the pennant. I mean, they have been way closer to the Cleveland Indians for four decades now than anything resembling the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cardinals.
Joe Charbonneau.
No, they have all those great characters.
So much of this, as much as, you know, I try to be level-headed and say, you know, you don't need to have the highest payroll in baseball, and you don't. And you don't need to spend some arbitrary amount of money to show your fans you're trying to win, because you don't. But at the same time, enthusiasm does matter. Branding does matter. Recruiting fans does matter. And that's where I look at this offseason, and I don't know if Mike Elias has the chops to do those things. We talked about this a lot as far as their messaging, going back to when Brandon Hyde was fired, right? And you and I think both agreed that, boy, they could really use a Larry Lucchino right now. In terms of not someone that's going to make the baseball decisions, but someone that reminds Mike Elias that you need to see the forest for the trees, reminds ownership that you need to see
Ripken
the forest for the trees.
Well, Cal Ripken was perceived as
being this.
And that's fake TV. That's reality television.
And to go back to my point here, that I'm kind of rambling here, but it's been 40-plus years now. You hear a lot in today's society about my truth or your truth, or, you know, and there's subjectivity there and there's a contradiction there that kind of drives me nuts. But the truth of the matter is, this has been a very substandard organization for four decades now, save for a couple solid yet very fleeting periods of time. When you're talking about the mid to late 90s with Pat Gillick and the Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette era. Other than that, man, there's not a whole lot to write home. Why not 1989, right? That wasn't
like
anything sustainable.
Yep.
It was a blip. So part of that is someone, and this is the problem when you have the Angelos people that have been retained, there's just not nearly as much acknowledgement as far as the urgency to make this thing better. And you've talked about this a lot.
The minute I met that guy, I said, there's been trauma here, and he didn't want to hear it.
And he just
didn't want to hear it.
And you just, you know, and I'm not picking on Craig Albernaz here, because he's not the guy to do that. He's the field manager. He's sitting next to his two of his many bosses right there at the press conference. But he talked about the Orioles tradition. That tradition's really freaking old at this point in time. And I don't say that to be disrespectful. And look, Craig Albernaz, like some people have picked on the fact he's got a Massachusetts accent. Brooks Robinson wasn't from Baltimore, and yet few have ever epitomized the beauty of Baltimore sports and Baltimore sports athletes.
Even
than
Buck
Brooks
with
Robinson.
His Southern draw.
So it doesn't even need to be that. But, man, it just – instead of, like, trying to gloss over these last few decades – and, look, I'm not saying they need to get in front of the cameras and just, like, flog themselves or anything. Like, you know, it's not anything crazy, but, like, come on. Like,
well, what makes, needs to, what makes
I want to see more urgency, and it just feels like everyone's way too comfortable considering what happened over this last year and how this new ownership group has already squandered a heck of a lot of goodwill in a year and a half. And I don't say that meaning all is lost, but, man, there needs to be some urgency this offseason. I said that. I thought that last year. We were sitting here with Dave Shinen 6 months, 7 months ago talking about the beginning of baseball season and how it felt like an underwhelming offseason. I didn't think it was going to go as poorly as it did, but now that it has, man, Mike Elias – And this ownership group, they need to rise to the moment, or I kind of shudder to think where this thing is going, because you've already lost two generations, a lot of people, and two generations of Orioles fans, potential Orioles fans in this greater region. And I think you're going to have more and more people that just check out and don't come back, because we are increasingly in a niche society. Even when it comes to sports, the NFL is about the only thing that still consistently draws great numbers. And
we wouldn't have said that 2 years ago, you know, because we were turning that corner and we were like, super excited.
And that's not to
fans.
Say it's not salvageable.
And assume that it would just go this way, you know, and never considered that it would go like that, you know.
Yeah. Well, the last time you guys got together on my show was 2 years ago, right?
I think it was
a completely different
vibe.
New owner, Corbin Burns, all of this stuff that was going on has been, to your point, squandered. I mean,
and again, I'm not saying that this is all doomed, but, man, like, it's you got to go. And it goes back to what I said about, you know, even in the micro when you're talking about someone like Gunnar Henderson, you know, heck, even if you're of the thought, if ownership is of the thought, you know, let's say Arrighetti thinks that they want to sign Gunnar Henderson, you better start winning, because he's going to get that money somewhere. He can get that money just about, I don't want to say anywhere.
There's eight places.
There are 12 different places he can get that money. So you better make yourself as attractive as you can be, so that when you're ready to hand him that blank check, he says, hey, we won the division, or hey, we made it to the World Series, or hey, maybe we won a World Series 2 years ago. I believe in this
place. Well, you'd say urgency. To me, that means that you make news, you're out in front, you keep people engaged.
It's got to be smart.
I don't think they know how to do that.
And they might not.
I literally don't think they know how to do that.
And they might not. And that's where I go to, okay, if you're not going to make major headlines in the winter, then probably your ticket sales are going to suffer. Not probably, they will. And then you are completely dependent on winning then.
Right.
And to your point, when is that going to show up? That probably won't show up till Memorial Day. You know, if they get up, they start 20-5. Okay, they're not going to sell out the last week of April if that happens. But you'll see a nice bump for the summer. But
the real bump now, dude, is your mother buying cable television in May after
she
buys the April month,
and that's right,
because she likes the Orioles. And then
it's so
all
difficult.
Of a sudden it's $20 a month, and it's June, and she hadn't watched the games, and then she just put like. From a revenue standpoint, that was just automatic revenue from my mother and Stan's father and mother in Dundalk that just had cable, and it was $40 a month. They got sucked out of the Jablonski household, the McGurgan household, the Recycling household. Just all the money went to them. Now they have to go earn that money post to post, person to person, house to house, account to account, subscription to subscription. There's no way they're not going to get less revenue. No way. And that's one of the reasons they all want to walk out and fight next year.
Sure.
And the reason the players want certainty, and that there could be a salary cap maybe if the Players Association thinks different than it did 50 years ago. But the revenue model for them, if I say Katie Griggs does not want to sit here and talk revenue model with me, neither does Mr. Moneybags.
It's very cloudy.
Because
even if things go very well on the field the next couple years, it's very cloudy. It's not to say it can't go well in the future, but how you're going to get there.
Getting millions of people in this area to just literally open their app and start giving them $150 or $200 bucks a year to have the games?
I think I think it's...
How many people are really going to do that?
I think you can get plenty of people to do it 20 bucks at a time, like you can, which, you know, Masson this past year when they finally went to the direct-to-consumer model, you could do it $20 a month, or you could do it where you paid for the rest of the season and they gave you know, it was $10 or $15 discount. But that is the problem, right? You now, and cable and ESPN's dealing with this. I mean, I mentioned the YouTube TV conflict right now, which has impacted me.
Luke's in darkness.
But I've gotten to the point now where once football season ends, I don't really need ESPN all that much. The Terps are on Big Ten Network and FS1. I'm not big into the NBA until the last few months of the season, other than watching the Sixers, which, you know, I have means of being able to do that when you have a brother-in-law who subscribes to League Pass and all that.
Yeah.
But they're very much, to your point, it used to be everyone in the region got, the Orioles got $3 from everybody that subscribed to cable TV or satellite. Now it's, boy, you better find, just to stay level with that, you've got to find one out of seven people, you know, one out of seven households to give you that, right? I mean, that's...
The example I used, and I told this story on the air earlier in the week, Luke and I went, by the way, we're six here, Luke's here, we're Pizza John's, we're eating pizza, eating French fries, all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, Raven Scratch-Offs. Luke and I went to Toronto for opening day, and I cut my foot open walking around. My foot was a little dry and cold in Toronto in March, and I was bleeding, and I didn't feel like going to the game the second night, and I had to buy a ticket, and he had a press pass, and we're there, and he's going, and so he left, and I said, I'm going to stay in the room and watch the game tonight, or I'll go to a bar. I'll go down to Keg. You know, like the Keg in Toronto, right? Sure. Toronto, as you would admit, Rasig, is just this giant 4 million people. It's a giant city, you know, multicultural in all this way.
Oh.
Big, giant buildings. You've all seen it last week in the World Series, what it looks like,
Lovely place.
So I'm in this city, this cosmopolitan city. They had a sellout on opening day. Last place team that would go to the World Series 5 months later, we didn't know. Friday night, I went out to get a couple of beverages after he left for the game, 5:30, 6 o'clock. I'm sitting in the bar, and I'm like, is the game going to be on in here? They're like, no, the game's not on in here. The game won't be on anywhere. I'm like,
whoa.
What do you mean? I'm like, so I have to go to the game, pay $18, walk 8 blocks on a 40-degree night? I have to go to the game because I can't get the game. They're like, no, it's on Apple TV. No bar will have it. No one will have it.
Yeah.
But the Raptors will be on. The Raptors will be on every television, and the Maple Leafs weren't. Well, maybe they weren't playing that night, but they weren't playing.
Although that start. I mean, like the NBA, there are games on Amazon. There are games on Prime now.
That's all well
but
and
that's
good.
A
but
that's
I'm going to tell you
I
what.
Agree.
On a Friday night,
a
if
problem.
I come into Pizza John's
it's a problem.
With my family,
no doubt.
And there's TVs here everywhere. There's football on here right now.
Yeah.
There's always a game on.
Right.
There's always. Every Pizza John's, every bar, every restaurant, everywhere on the second game of the year where you go to Costas, you go to all these sports bars, and they're either scrambling or borrowing the bartender's Apple code to try to get it on one TV in the corner.
Yeah.
People don't care that much. They don't care that much. And they didn't care in Toronto. Now, Game 7, everybody in the country, they're all making it rain with $5,000 tickets for the World Series. But I'm telling you, the second night of the season, you couldn't go anywhere in Toronto and find the Blue Jays on television. Tell me how that's helping them. Tell me how dumb that is that if I were the commissioner, I would have to step in and say, we can never do a deal that's going to turn our sport off everywhere in the city except for some subscription. And this is where I want to get personal on it because I had a problem last week. Last Thursday, I flew to Nashville to see the Sheryl Crow, Cameron Crowe symposium. And the game was going on at the same time. Now, in a modern world, I get the game on my phone. I sit and watch the game. We do the struggle that I had, and my kids in Amazon Prime, and getting it down, using the password, getting the $8.99 and the $12.99 a month.
Right.
I think I put my daughter-in-law into an $8.99 package if I don't get off of that thing in the next 21 days.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Literally, I had to get in in order to get the game. And it's the first time in my life I'm here. It's my gig. I want to watch the game.
Which game was it? Was it the
Ravens and the Dolphins?
The Ravens Dolphins.
Oh, the Ravens Dolphins game. Sorry.
Thursday night.
Which was on MAR locally, but it was
but
on
I was
a prime
out of market.
In Nashville, yeah.
It
yeah.
thought my daughter-in-law was in market. I had to activate my location in order to make it work, but because my daughter-in-law is registered, I don't know. Either way, I literally got it working at 7:13 Central Time. Like, literally, when it came on, finally, I'm like, I'm just going to give them the effing money. You know, I'm just going to give them the nine. I got to watch the game. And The feeling of that is to never let it happen again for me. Never let it happen again that I get pinched somewhere where I have to give these companies, give Amazon $8 and start pulling my credit card out. And that's maybe that's an old guy thing. Young people don't care about it enough to do that.
I mean,
and they don't have the finances to do it. So I worry about their revenue model, and I really, at heart, and I thought about this last week, I worry about their arrogance. Because there's an arrogance built in that you need it, you want it, it's oxygen for Luke Jones to have baseball. Yeah. And I'm telling you, Luke, you can look me in the eye. You're in your 40s. When you get to be my age, you will care less about it. You will, having done this professionally. And then you're going to say as to whether it's worth $200 a year, $400 a year, whether a concert's worth $20 last night or $100 last night or a beer, there's going to come a cutoff for all of it. Yeah. And I think, especially college sports, they've taken this for granted in a massive way. And baseball's been on the front end. Because the grim reality that you presented of 42 years of substandard operating is their reality.
Yeah.
They don't believe that. They don't acknowledge that behind closed doors. So, you know, denial's a river in Egypt. Yeah. And they're in denial. You know, the fact that they don't let me into their press conferences and they don't want real questions, they're in a different sense of what their responsibility is after taking $600 million to kick you out of the press box and put you in left field and build a bigger scoreboard for everybody next year because they think that's what the fan... Sashi Brown had the audacity last week to say, we've listened to the fans. They want more premium.
Yeah, right. Come on.
Come on, dude. Yeah. Come on, man. Come on, man. Come on.
I thought, and again, this goes beyond the Orioles, and this is happening in all the sports. I mean, it is. I mean,
well, there's a Katie Brown and a Sasha Brown in front of all of this.
But to your point,
with a Harvard education and an arrogance that goes along with it, you know, literally.
This was probably about 2 months ago at this point in time. Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, made such a fascinating comment. He said that the NBA is a highlights-based sport. And I think, to go back to what you mentioned as far as your dilemma as far as being able to watch the Ravens game 2 weeks ago on Prime. Look, so many of these games, especially talking about baseball, I mean, the Orioles haven't been on over-the-air TV. And, you know, you go back to the days of O's TV when half the games were on MAR and WNUV and the other half were on home team sports. And, you know, you sprinkle in a few ESPN Sunday night games. You know what I mean. So we've paid for games. It's just now... It used to be one cable subscription or one satellite subscription. Now you need five of them.
Well, the a la carte if part you of that is...
So going back to what I was saying about, you know, the Adam Silver comment, I think these leagues would tell you, you know what? Like they're not going to say this. We don't give a fudge if you can't easily access all 162 games or all 82 games in the NBA or the NHL or not so much the NFL. You know, that's kind of the... But even then, they'll tell you, well, hey... If you want to watch your team play on Christmas, you better have a Netflix
subscription.
Well, the
difference with that Thursday night last week, so everywhere I walked in Nashville, the game was on in the
bars. That's a more exclusive product because it's the NFL.
It's the NFL, correct.
They have a scarcity principle that they clean up on compared to so much product that these other sports have. But they would tell you the revenue is so much better for them overall to do it that way that, well, they don't care if you end up skipping out on the Apple game. If it means
they don't care about you.
Yeah.
They don't care about you.
This goes back to my ESPN.
Arrogance. Boom, right there.
My ESPN YouTube TV conflict right now.
They don't need you.
Alphabet. You're talking about a multi-trillion dollar company. They don't give a fudge that YouTube TV doesn't have ESPN right now. They might at some point in time, but they're trying to keep their costs down.
They have lawyers for that.
And Disney on the flip side. Disney has, you know, ESPN now has their own direct-to-consumer package. They own Hulu Live, their live TV package, and they just purchased Fubo, another cable-like streaming live TV package. So that right there makes me question right off the bat whether Disney's negotiating in any kind of good faith with Google. And as I said, like Google, so long story short, and it brings it back to what I was just saying, they don't care about us. I mean, they care about our wallets. And if they're getting, you know, if their bottom line says it's way better to have a deal with Apple, even if Luke and Nestor can't watch the Orioles for those three times a year, they're going to be on Apple.
Well, the Orioles better worry about your wallet.
Sure. No. And look, This goes back to
they
the,
don't want your wallet.
This
they
goes back
need your wallet.
Sure.
He put $1.8 billion out, and they're upside down, and they're hemorrhaging. And they have no business plan, and they're about to go on strike a year from now.
Well,
but other than that, I hope they have a hell of an offseason.
And that's why the 30 like, owners want to split up all that TV revenue equally. I mean, or not all 30. The ones
ain't
who
get socialism.
The ones
that's
who aren't
socialism.
The ones who aren't the Dodgers, the Yankees, you know, the select half dozen to 10, you know, 10 biggest markets. All the smaller mid and smaller market teams, yeah, they want to split that all up. Yeah.
To go to what you were saying though, it is partially about the money from our standpoint, but it's partially from an old person's standpoint. It's a lot about the principle of the whole thing.
Oh, the principle of the thing is
it's like,
tell
we're
me
not
how
doing this anymore.
I'm not defending it.
I'm just explaining it.
I believe you.
Fan who gives them $5,000 a year to buy tickets, and I'm on their Birdland because I got three kids and I go down there. Just the fact that they don't give me the games on TV and give me a login at Orioles.com for my subscription that allows me to get every game anywhere, anytime is. It's a bad model, dude. It's a bad. Yeah. You go double dipping people that, you know, my hot water costs one thing and my cold water costs another. My shower costs different than boiling. Dude, it's water. Come on, stop, man. Like, like you either want me to be a fan and you want my money and you want my access and you care enough to show me your product, or you're going to put your product around the corner, behind a paywall, over the hill, and it's going to be what's happened, sadly, to the Baltimore Banner and a lot of Baltimore Sun. I get a headline, but I don't go over the hoop because whatever, and that's a problem for journalism all the way around. Paying for journalism, paying for sports, paying for adventures, paying for online things, and then the part where you give them your credit card and 3 years later they're still soaking you. That's the part that's the old guy for me.
Sure.
That's
sure,
the part
me
for
too.
Me.
Yeah.
Is that like I don't want I want to fix cost. I want to, and that's not even me being old. That's just me being fair as a consumer to say I'm in on the Orioles.
Give me convenience. Make it easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I might value that a little more than even the cost.
I'll pay more for that. We all pay more.
And that's where I laugh as someone who cut the cord and has six different streaming services. It's a pain in the butt sometimes to figure out what
six
games on what.
Six passwords, too.
Yeah.
No doubt. Man.
And
forget it.
While I'm still saving more money than when I had a subscription to DirecTV for whatever ungodly number it was at the end before I finally said goodbye to it, it is a pain in the butt. And there is, and with so much of this being splintered and fractured and all these games are divvied up, they are training me as a consumer, as a fan of whatever sport I'm talking about, where, you know
just
what?
Say no.
There might be two or three Orioles games where I'll just listen to it on the radio and I'll watch a movie, or I'll follow it on my phone and I'll see some to go back to Adam Silver's point about the NBA, I'll see the highlights on social media later on.
Or you could do what I do every Friday in baseball season and say, fudge that Apple TV.
Sure.
That's what I say. I'm just not watching them tonight.
And
that's that.
And again, there are people within that realm that would tell you, well, Apple's given us a heck of a lot of money, and we think you'll come back the other 6 days of the week. Now, that sounds arrogant as you know what, but depending on the threshold, the NFL's been arrogant for decades now, yet
it's working.
They
out so
are
far.
Overwhelmingly number one. How much the other sports can do that, where people will put up for it, I think that's much more up for debate. And that's not to say the NFL can do that forever either, but...
You done with Luke? You got anything else for Luke?
No, sorry. I've talked way too much.
No, I'm so happy you did. Rage against the machine. That's all. Rage against the machine.
All that said, I think...
Sports and everywhere else.
I do think there is a path for the Orioles to have a really good offseason, but, boy, they've got work to do. They absolutely have a lot of work to do, and you have to hope to inspire some of your fans and galvanize some of your fans along the way, because this has not been a good 18 months for the Baltimore Orioles, when we all thought... You know, coming up on 2 years ago, that they were really turning a corner, not just on the field, but off the field, and hasn't felt that way ever since.
It's good that there's journalists like you guys out there that keep it all honest for all of us, just to keep us, you know,
I try
figuring out what's going on, you know, because it's.
I have plenty of questions. If they ever want to come and answer them, I'm happy to. I'll be very polite to them, but they're not going to sit here and BS me either. I'm not going to allow that. Ravens scratch-offs are available for the Maryland Lottery. My man, Rasig. My man, Luke Jones. You can find him at Baltimore Luke. We're down here at Pizza John's in Essex. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out for, figgy pudding and Thanksgiving meals and stuffing and probably some proper sauerkraut and kielbasa before it's all over with as well. My thanks to Todd Schuller and Bill Cole for stopping by earlier. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, Ravens scratch-offs. Also, our friends at GBMC, public service announcement. Have you had a colonoscopy?
I have.
Have you had one?
Plenty.
Luke,
I've had several
of them. 42.
Too young?
45 is probably going to be my recommendation because my grandfather had colon cancer. So
I'm 57. Yeah. Are you mad at me?
This is your first?
I mean,
yes.
I don't know if I'd say I'm mad at you, but it's definitely well.
Do this. Tell me I'm irresponsible.
Well past time when you should have done it.
What's your date on your colonoscopy?
2 weeks from Friday.
So not 19th?
21st.
21st, yeah. I've got a biopsy on the 19th.
Now, let me say this. They did say when they were scheduling this, the woman's like, do you want the morning or the afternoon? Oh, I've heard about this. We're doing the morning, man.
Do the morning.
Because I can't eat anything.
That's right. Go for the morning.
I've taken my mom a couple times when she's had them, and yeah, the morning's better.
Oh, let me. All right. Can I just give you one quick colonoscopy story?
That's what I'm looking for. I need help.
I did. You know, it's all the prep.
I need courage. I might leave the country on the 20th.
There's all the prep for a colonoscopy like that you have to do. That's the most difficult part. It's just a pain. A pain in the you know
where. My wife said, read the instructions.
I did, I did all of this, got to the office, and the office was closed for my colonoscopy. I was away for a while.
Oh,
they
man.
Tried to contact me to tell me that the office had closed, and I was away.
Oh, you did all the hard, heavy lifting?
I know. Oh, it was rough. That is a rough way to...
I can't say I will be disappointed if they push off my colonoscopy.
Brutal.
GBMC's not going to do that because they got me covered.
They won't.
So I appreciate them and I appreciate all the response. We're back for more Pizza John's. I got John Hoey here from The Y. We're going to talk about the community at Turkey Trot. Speaking of the holidays, my man Ron Cassie is here from Baltimore Magazine. I was going to sit him down with you and talk baseball and you and
talk
whatever.
You can still
talk
to Luke. Well, I'm going, but Luke can stay here and talk.
Cassie
Luke.
Wants to talk ball, man. He's been riding bike in Morocco.
Luke,
he's
you
been
should
all
stay
over
with
place,
him,
this guy,
man. I'll watch a little of it. But
all right. I'm going to step out, take a break. We're back at Pizza John's. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It is a Friday, and we're having fun here. We're Pizza John's, one of my favorite places. I'm between cheesesteak and pizza, but never French fries and gravy. Stay with us.